Welcome to the Smoke and Rope Podcast, the show that brings together Michigan's top cannabis growers, advocates, and business owners to offer a fresh and honest perspective of Michigan's cannabis industry. Stick with us to get the lowdown from the people who have been on the ground floor of cannabis business in Michigan and gain insights into where the industry may be heading.
Welcome to the Smoke and Rope Podcast. I'm Ryan Basor, and today is episode 6. We have as a special guest Josh Hovey with Martin Waymire. But before we introduce Josh, I want to say hello to my co-host, Tom Beller, over at Real Leaf Solution. Good morning, Tom. How you feeling?
I'm all right, Ryan. Yourself?
Doing great. Great. And Kevin Pybus over at True Cannabis. How you doing, Kevin?
Doing good, Ryan. Appreciate you having me on the show.
That's great. And we are actually up here at the MICIA Summer Annual, Shandy Creek, doing this broadcast from there. Had a great time last night. A lot of great people up there. If you missed it this year, you definitely need to come next. But with that, I want to introduce Josh Hovey and Martin Waymire. Morning, Josh. How you doing?
Hey, Ryan. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yep. And the reason, as always, we like to talk about how we met our guest and talk a little about Michigan cannabis history. I met Josh about 11 years ago, when I had Capital City Caregivers, and Josh was part of the planning commission, I believe, in the city of Lansing. And
yep.
Was that true, Josh?
Yep. Yeah. I'm still on the board too.
Still on it. Cool. Yeah. And that's where I met Josh. He was working for Truscott Rossman, vice president over there at the time. And over the years, Josh ended up getting involved in cannabis. I found out he's always been a fan, we'll put it that way. And when it was Prop 1 campaign came around, Truscott Rossman was hired, and Josh was the spokesman for the campaign and did a great job. And Josh earned the respect of the cannabis community the hard way, which is the only way you get it in Michigan. Paying his lumps, learning what to say and not what to say, you know, and to do. And now he's with Martin Waymire. Now, Martin Waymire does all of my Redemption's PR and digital media, and is just really good as far as a consultant, because when I've been watching a lot of the PR firms out there with all these new companies, and they're hiring a lot of people and they don't understand cannabis, and that shows. So that's why I knew I had to go with Josh, and some of the other guys with Redemption are with Josh as well. So Josh, I'm going to stop talking. Why don't you introduce yourself a little bit, and then we'll get into some questions with Kevin and Tom.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Ryan. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. It really was quite the experience, and sorry about my dogs right now, with the Prop 1 campaign. You know, we ran a really lean campaign, and I was really pretty much the main person going around the state speaking at community groups, going on TV, and I was lucky that my girlfriend at the time, now wife, Joanna, would drive me 3 hours across the state to do a TV interview while I could work in the car. And it was a long, hard-fought battle over 2017 and 2018 to get this thing passed and to bring full legalization to the state of Michigan. I know all of the guys on this podcast have been in community meetings and just been berated, and I can relate and share that experience. One of the very first interviews I had to go do was to the Livonia Republican Club and do a debate with a bunch of Republicans and very close-minded ones at that in the room. I've been accused of all sorts of nefarious things, and I know Tom and the rest of the guys can all relate. It's amazing what we've had to go through in this industry just to provide first medicine and then freedom to people. So it's really an honor to be a part of this and to help this industry grow.
That's for sure. That's great. I had a question, because take me through, you got a great team over there, of course, too, and Nate Darling, and has been doing a lot of great stuff with all my social media and the videos, but when you're taking on a client, a cannabis client, how do you decide yes or no? Do you have any, are you looking for any more? But then what's the process of, what's the messaging that we're going to do? And can you kind of take us through that process and help us with that?
Yeah, I think, you know, with any PR firm, they should be starting with a few different basic questions for any client. And I think it's more important with cannabis than ever because of some of the challenges in the industry. But you want to look at, you know, is the client ethical? Are they in the business for the right reasons? You know, from a business standpoint, as a communications agency, you want to make sure you don't have a conflict of interest with any other clients. That's always critical from an ethical standpoint. But then from my standpoint, having been on the ground floor of cannabis legalization in Michigan, I want to work with clients that are not in it to monopolize the market. They're not going to try and, you know, use their influence to try and change laws in their favor and at the damage of other players in the industry. You know, as part of the Prop 1 campaign, we campaigned on a pro small business, pro free market industry. And, you know, there are players in the state that don't have that same mentality. And so I would never advocate that our firm take on anything that would be a detriment to the groundwork that you and I and others have started.
That's great. Can you tell me a little bit about like what you're doing with Relief Solutions? I've been watching the social media with them and the Kalkaska and the Woods and the Bigfoot. What's kind of the what's the strategy behind that? And I really like it, but I wanted to hear how that got developed. And maybe Tom can jump in. Maybe he had a part of that as well.
Yeah, I think Tom should jump in here. But one of the things I think that's important with any cannabis company and their communications and marketing is being authentic. And so it's finding a voice that fits with their audience. And with the case of Redemption and Real Leaf, they're going for clients and customers that are more of your experienced cannabis consumer, not trying to, you know, cannabis is fun. And it's something that a lot of people consume recreationally for relaxation, for things like that. And so you want to find a voice for the brand that fits with that audience. And so, you know, we get to have a lot of fun with Tom. We get on a call brainstorming every week. And, you know, a lot of times it's he and his wife, Krista, where, you know, they'll just tell us something funny that was going on in the grow operation or something like that. And we just kind of spitball and, you know, with Real Leaf especially, their brand has really grown organically just through a lot of the conversations that we've had. And, you know, we're really honored to be able to work with them and have a lot of fun doing their social media videos and highlighting their team. They've got a really stellar team over growing some really great flower. And I know Kevin also is growing some amazing flower. And unfortunately, we're not doing his social media, but so I can only speak to Tom's, but it is really an organic thing where we just kind of fit with the personality of the company. We get to do Redemption's social media as well. And Redemption is focused on, you know, erasing the damages that have been done by Prohibition. And so it's a slightly more serious brand, but at the same time, it's about highlighting all of the brands within the Redemption family and the partners that are producing Redemption products. So in that sense, we get to do still some fun stuff, but we also get to talk about social justice, which is really important in this industry.
Yeah, we're kind of in a unique place here that, you know, we're, with all seriousness aside, we just like to have fun. We're a goofy group, of people. And the whole Yeti thing kind of just came out of the conversation with Martin Waymire guys and gals, you know, having our weeklies. And, you know, the way I see the Yeti thing and the cannabis thing, we're always searching for, you know, a new strain. We're constantly pheno hunting over here looking for the thing, you know, the Yeti or the whatever, you know, you want to call it. The thing that almost can't be found, you know, so constantly searching. That's kind of the way I see it. But, you know, also mostly it came from just me lumbering through the woods and Krista caught a picture of me and it looked like that famous Yeti photo. And it's been a family joke for years. And now it's kind of just grown into part of our marketing, you know. And the, you know, Martin Waymire, Josh and his team ran with it. You know, we love it. It's fun. And if you're not having fun with cannabis, other than fighting social injustices, very important, but you still need to have fun. You know, if you're not having fun, you need to get out of the way. You can't take it too seriously. And we're not all about hype. You know, there's too much hype. There's too much, everyone's got the best. There's too much, everything's fire. And, you know, I get it. You know, you want to make sure that people get excited for it. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's just really something fun to do. And we're up in Northern Michigan and, you know, he's out there.
That's right. And you know, I think it's funny that, you know, not to bash any specific brand, but too often you look at the branding that some of these cannabis companies have done and it looks like an ad agency that's used to marketing Chevys or Cadillacs or something like that are putting together this imagery and branding for some of these cannabis companies. And, you know, when you think back to the very foundation of this industry, it's fun. It's people who have been, you know, going to fish concerts and jamming out at Electric Forest or, you know, hanging out in their buddy's basement, making homemade bongs out of, you know, 2 liter pop bottles back in the day. That's what this industry started with. And to be true to that, I think is important, and not to forget where we all came from, which I really respect out of all of the Redemption family brands.
It's great, Josh. You bring up a good point that I watch and you know, I love thinking about marketing and branding and watching what people are doing. And I'm seeing some of these companies, like you said, they're PR firms that don't understand cannabis, and it's a lot of pictures of models and what's your favorite strain, or they're going with the idea of this makes you relax, this makes you excited, all that stuff. And then, you know, a lot of it is they'll put any flower in that and just try to sell it. But one of the strategies I hear about is they're going after the consumers, going after people that haven't smoked yet. Like, that's a strategy. And that's something I just don't understand, because cannabis is social. And if you use cannabis a lot and you know it, it's social. So if one of my buddies starts smoking and goes and buys a joint that's going to be him uplifted, eventually he's going to be hanging out with me and other people, and we're going to say, what the hell, you know, what are you doing there? What strain is it? That, all that. And the new people that are going to smoke cannabis, they're going to integrate with the people already been smoking cannabis. So I hear that and see that as a strategy, and it's kind of mind-boggling to me. I don't think it's going to work. And you can really tell when people are using social media and marketing what they're saying when they do like cannabis and when they love it and when they're not. So yeah, you just made me think about that when you're talking about that other ad agency. But
yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely plenty of room to grow the market and to bring in new consumers. And you know, not everyone is an IPA drinker. You know, some people like light beer, and that's okay. But I think being true to the industry and true to the foundation is important, and not to oversell something. You know, THC is part of the plant, but for too many people, that's all they look at when they're buying flower. And there's so much more. There's the terpenes and the whole entourage effect. And I think there's too many companies that are just, as we talked about, just talking about, oh, this is fire. Or, you know, they're talking through, you know, some Instagram influencers or celebrity influencers or things like that. And people who are, you know, maybe they are, maybe they aren't truly fans of cannabis. But brand authenticity is really important. And I think more so in this industry than in a lot of others, because of the history of prohibition and what we've gone through to get to this point. It's just so important to be authentic and to not overhype your stuff or, you know, be something that you're not.
Yeah, it's actually, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, we were hearing a lot of, hey, cannabis is just a commodity. It's like anything else. And we've talked about this already, but I want to bring it home again. You know, it's just like selling widgets, and eventually that's what it's going to be. But, you know, maybe not. I don't think so. This is the most miraculous plant that we know of that's ever been in this universe. And it's becoming legal after 80, 90 years. And it's a culture that made it that way. So, you know, I just don't see cannabis as just as a commodity. And it really, and like we just keep talking about, it shows when whoever's doing your PR and marketing and a lot of that, whether or not they understand cannabis or not. So it isn't just a commodity. But I got a question for you, Josh. What's when you first got on Prop 1, I know you probably took some heat a little bit. I saw people ganging up on you on Safer Mish, listserv at first. You got any funny stories about cannabis folks maybe a little getting fired up with you and giving you a hard time?
Oh, man. I mean, I think at first it was like, who is this guy? He's not been involved in MI Legalize. He's like, it's really a question of like, he's not one of us. He's a suit. I mean, I worked in PR for about 10 years or so before working specifically in the industry, always been a big supporter of it, but never been on the activist side. And so I think I had to win over a lot of people as my role as spokesperson and communications director for the legalization campaign. And I think I probably made some missteps here or there where, you know, probably Rick Thompson or one of the other guys who've been at it for a long time would, you know, hit me up and be like, hey, you know, you really got to say this differently. Jeff Hank, another one who's been a long time activist with MI Legalized, would put me in my place. I can't remember specifically what the phrasing might have been. But I do know it had to do with not turning off caregivers and not to alienate them, because they really are the foundations of the industry. And that was a lesson I learned really quick, and it only took, you know, one miscommunication to set that straight. I think the harder thing when it came to Prop 1 was to thread the needle of making sure that this wasn't a big monopolized cannabis issue, and demonstrating to the activist community that this is a very well-written law that is open to small businesses, because we had come right off of the experience of Ohio, where their attempt at legalization was basically a full monopoly written into their state constitution, and that failed miserably. And we needed to make sure that we brought the activist community into the fold, and then also appeal to your middle ground voters who wanted, who maybe didn't like the idea of people being put in jail or criminalized for a harmless plant, but at the same time maybe didn't want businesses opening up in their backyards, which is what we're still dealing with post-legalization and getting communities to opt in and allow businesses to operate. So we had to thread that needle quite a bit. And I think that was the challenge of legalization in Michigan. I think it's a lesson that, you know, we worked with the Marijuana Policy Project out of DC, who runs legalization operations all across the country to great success. And I think Michigan became kind of a model for them in terms of how to write legislation that would be appealing to a wide variety of people and give ultimate flexibility to local control. And I think that's where we really won people over in Michigan. So I was saying that, like, we really had to thread the needle of not wasting law enforcement resources, but also appealing to that middle ground. So that was the challenge of Prop 1 and some of the lessons I learned. Luckily, we ran against people who had some really ridiculous arguments and tried to use scare tactics that, you know, the over-the-top Reaper Madness type of stuff that, you know, just doesn't appeal to people anymore. They understand that cannabis is a legitimate medicine. They also understand that it's really much safer than alcohol or tobacco or so many other products that we allow people to use. And so, you know, the genie's out of the bottle. People aren't afraid of it anymore. It's just a matter of how willing are people to be to see it open in their community. And that's where I think the battle in Michigan is now.
Hey, Josh, it's Kevin Pybus. I just wanted to touch on a couple of things. First, light beer is not acceptable. Secondly, secondly, I do intend on utilizing you guys in the future to do some marketing and branding. I'm kind of on the come up, kind of working on building out my my bigger facility. And I've focused on doing that. And then in the future, we'll work on building up the brand and whatnot. But I had a couple of questions for you. One, you know, with the political atmosphere that we're dealing with right now, there's a lot of hate. I see a lot of people, their thing is to try to knock other people instead of build up their brand. What do you guys do to combat the negativity that you might see online in the comment section or things like that? And then the other thing is how would you advise, you know, any of your clients as far as the political atmosphere about getting involved, you know, having their business make statements about politics and things like that? How do you advise people about that?
Sure. I'll go with the first question or the last question first. You know, when getting involved and making statements in regard to Black Lives Matter or police brutality and all of the hot topic issues that are going on today, first of all, it's coming up with something that is true to your brand and making a statement that is meaningful, but also it has to go beyond the statement. You have to take concrete actions that back up those words, because the last thing you want to do is be seen as just pandering or giving lip service to a really important social issue. Not willing to back up your words with actions, then you're better off saying nothing, because you're opening yourself up to even more criticism. The second part of that, I forgot what the second part was. Kevin, remind me.
I think that we see a lot of negativity now online. I think in politics, instead of somebody saying, you know, hey, this is what I'm really good at, their logic is, well, they're worse than me at this. And so what I think what we see online is somebody posts something that's positive, and you'll see some troll come in there and just make some negative comment to try to discredit, you know, what that person's trying to do. I don't like it. I don't think it's the way things should be, but I see it more and more. The question is, I guess, how do we combat it and what do we do about it?
Yeah, I think the first thing is never feed the trolls. You keep on feeding them and engaging with them, and that just makes them hungrier for more. And so, you know, you want to use your online platforms, your Instagram, your Facebook, what have you. The kids like TikTok these days, I guess. But you want to use your platforms, whatever they are, to set the record straight, you know, be honest and have some integrity if people are going to keep on bashing, you don't have to allow that on your platform. I think there's a difference between, honest and legitimate criticism, which we all have to be open to listening, especially in the era that we're in with Black Lives Matter and elevating communities, minority communities and communities of color to listen and hear what they're saying, especially when it comes to diversity, equity, inclusion type of issues. But when it comes to just, you know, in this industry, sometimes you see activists or even other competitors bashing the other. And in the long run, I think consumers see through that. And if you put out a statement to correct the record and you follow through with some legitimate actions, there's going to be consumers who see that and are going to become advocates for you, because people don't like to deal with that type of BS. It's childish. It is unprofessional, and we all need to just rise above it. And again, not feed those trolls who are trying to bring negativity into a really positive industry.
No, I agree 100%. It sometimes can be difficult not to engage, people that are having negative things to say about you. But I agree, being above that is definitely the way to go.
Well, and I think we've moved past an era where the customer is always right. The customer is entitled to give their feedback and opinions, but you're not always able to make every single person happy, especially if they're demands are unreasonable, and that's where you have to sometimes draw a line and be willing to stand up for yourself and your business and say your piece, do what you can to make things right. If someone is being unreasonable and continues to harass or bash you, you don't have to put up with that on your platforms. You can say, maybe we're not the right business for you, and we wish you luck and move on from there.
Yeah, I really liked that, those answers, Josh. And on a previous point, once you won over Jamie Lowell, Rick Thompson, and Chad Morrow, so you were all right after that. I know they were busting down a little at first, but when those guys, all three of them, are on your side, you know you've done something right. But you brought up a point I want to talk about. You talked about Black Lives Matter, social equity, and you're a Lansing guy, obviously. I consider myself a Lansing guy, even though I don't live in the city. And I got a little bit of an issue with the way that their city council's handling things. They just voted 7-0 to make racism a public health problem, which is fine. That's great. But then their policies for like their cannabis ordinance is the exact opposite. It's against the little guy. It's against social equity. They're fine with those people working for these companies, but the way their system's set up, it's those people aren't going to get a license. So I feel like that city, Lansing, has a little reckoning to do on that. What's your thoughts, and when is that going to start taking place, when some of these communities that are supposed to be progressive and are coming about like that, but then have policies that are completely opposite?
That's a really good question, and it's challenging to watch how social equity programs have advanced in Michigan. Prop 1 was written with the directive that the state is required to develop social equity programs. I think everyone has been pretty underwhelmed with the result of those programs, and some credit and leniency has to be given to the state, because this is brand new to them. This is a brand new industry, and trying to undo almost 100 years of prohibition and racist drug policies can't be done overnight. I think we all have to recognize that first. And I know we're going to bring some more guests on in coming episodes who are even more well-versed in the social equity issues than I am, but I think communities have to be willing to do more than just declare, you know, social justice and equity an issue for them. They need to back it up with policies. And if you're not, people see through that, like we've already discussed. And especially when it comes to cannabis, when Prop 1 was written with the intention that, you know, communities who have been disproportionately impacted by prohibition would be able to excel in this industry, right now this just hasn't been the case. And there's so much more to it than just, you know, talent, like saying that that discrimination is a public health issue. We also need to recognize that communities of color typically have lower access to capital than white communities, people who look like all of us on this episode right now. And that's a result of systemic racism. And so, yes, there's lower licensing fees and some things like that, but we need to look at what like Illinois has been doing and dedicating funding to communities that have been disproportionately impacted by prohibition and helping them get these licenses and the funding to start these businesses, because I think Michigan has fallen short, and we can and must do better.
Just right along with what you're saying there, I find it really interesting that the state is the one saying, okay, company that's licensed, now you have to have a social equity program, when the real problems, the real barriers to entry are ones that they implemented into the laws. And that's really the thing that's making it difficult for people to get in. We were very fortunate to have access to capitalization, but that barrier to entry, like you're saying, is huge. And of course, the socioeconomic barriers for people of color that, you know, to even, you know, day by day, let alone have access to say, oh yeah, I can, you know, capitalize $300,000 to start a cannabis business. But the state's the one that imposed that, and it's up to the businesses that are already licensed to have a program to help people. I mean, I'm all about helping people. I'm super proud to be part of the Redemption Program, and it just seems like that it's a little ironic that we're the ones that now bear the responsibility to somehow right the injustices when the injustices are literally written into the law.
Oh, 100%. And Kevin, you've been involved in the industry in Colorado. I'm interested in what you saw there and how Michigan compares.
You know, honestly, I saw nothing there. I never heard any kind of mention of social injustice or trying to help that situation in the time that I was there. Now, they may have moved forward with some kind of program since I left Colorado. But Tom's 100% right. You know, I feel like, you know, it was one of those things that was written in to kind of, you know, appease some people in this, and they never really thought through the process on how they were going to make it happen. And so now here we are, a bunch of licenses have already been given out. Communities have either opted in or opted out. When they opted in, they've got the people that they're working with, and this program is moving past the people who were supposed to help. I think that there needs to be some serious thought done on how to correct this and make the program work. I think Tom's right to put it on us, the purveyors, to come up with some kind of program on how I'm going to fix it. I don't know how that's going to work. It's up to the state to really take some initiative to come up with a game plan and make something happen. And they need to do it fast because time's a flying by.
Those are all really, really great points. And you can just even take in Redemption's case. I had a private business give me a $50,000 social equity grant. It wasn't the state. It was Gage. And the state didn't make them do it. They took it upon themselves. They're going to keep doing that. And, you know, all of us on this show involved with Redemption, we're going to do our best to help people get back on their feet, get training for jobs, get training in the cannabis industry, all that. But you guys are all right. Like, states trying, they need to step up, but cannabis moves at light speed with opportunities. We've got a 2-3 year window here in Michigan where everyone's gonna, you know, this is make or break time in my opinion. But with that, you know, we're about to head off to the first annual Chronic Cup golf outing up here for the MICIA, and you know, glad we were able to do this show remotely as always, and just we get some final thoughts from Tom, Kevin, and Josh, and we'll see you guys next week. Tom, any final thoughts?
Just really missing you up here, Josh, this year. Hopefully next year we get to hang out at the conference for sure. And great to talk to you. Ryan, good to see you. I won't be at the golf outing. I will be at the tea party.
Awesome. Take pictures, please.
Little hat.
Yeah. Kevin, any final thoughts for you?
No, you know, at the end of the day, like we discussed, I just feel like the state really needs to step up and do their part. I've said it for a long time. I feel like I'm a partner with the state. If this is going to succeed and we're going to move forward and everybody's going to be successful, we need to work together. And I don't see that from the state. I think that they really need to start directing some of their assets to try to help the situation for the licensees and to help for the people that have been negatively affected by the war on drugs. And it's up to them to step up and make something happen.
Couldn't agree more. Could not agree more. Josh, you know, really thank you for being on the show. It's there's a lot of history there, and you know, there's gonna be a lot more history. So thank you. And would you do you have any final thoughts or anything you'd like to say?
I just say it's just an honor to work with all you guys, and really appreciate the conversation today. And you know, let's keep on moving this industry forward. We know there's much more work to be done. You're all are kicking a lot of butt, but there's so much more to do in terms of social equity and getting people engaged and involved. So that's next. Looking forward to it.
That's great. Well, that's Josh Hovey with Martin Wehmeyer. And as you can hear, they know cannabis. They believe in it. I think their lineup is just about full on clients. So if you're a good company that loves the plant, you better call them soon or it'll be too late. But with that, thanks everyone for listening in. Looking forward to next week. We'll have a Q, and we're going to talk about Anquanet, and we'll talk about social equity. With that, thanks everyone for being on, and we'll see you next week.
The Smoke and Rope Podcast is produced and hosted by me, Ryan Basor, the owner of Redemption Cannabis. Have ideas for episode topics or would like to be a guest on the show? Contact us at ryanb@redemptioncanna.com. Thanks for being along for the journey.